You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's Global Rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club. Good morning, welcome to the show. It's Friday, May the 7th, packed show for you as well as we ease into the weekend. I'll be hearing from Jane Mangan in a few moments' time with her thoughts on the trials that we've had and the trials that are to come and the trials and tribulations of various trainers trying to get horses ready for big races. We will be looking ahead to the Lingfield Derby trial with Rafe Beckett, who trains a horse called Scope, who's related to the filly of his that won the Oaks in the same colours, Look Here, all the way back in 2008. I'll be catching up with Bob Champion, who's walking 191 miles to raise money for his own Bob Champion Cancer Trust, 40 years on from his wonderful Grand National victory on Aldeniti. I will also, later in the programme, be speaking to James Willoughby, and we'll be catching up on the Thoroughbred Racing Commentary Global Ranking. Some notable movers this time, and he'll be telling me why, in spite of only finishing fourth in the Kentucky Derby, Essential Quality has risen four places to eighth in the world. And I'll also be talking to Greg Taylor, the head of marketing at Great British Racing, about the revamped In the Paddock website, which is trying to bring owners together to seek new partnerships and increase the ownership base in the sport. As I said, Jane Mangan is with me today, and Jane, lots to look forward to in England and Ireland over the weekend. The Derrynstown Stud Derby trial is the feature at Leopardstown. But first of all, I want to ask you, there's been suggestions this week that Ireland might finally be starting to move. What's the situation as regards getting people back on racecourses?
There was a suggestion of movement during the week from an Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, suggesting that crowds could be back this summer. And then we wanted to know a little bit more about that. Leo Varadkar went on off the ball, suggesting that July could be basically the schedule for some of the first pilot events to get crowds back at outdoor fixtures, which of course would include racing. And I know in Ireland, when people say outdoor fixtures, they immediately think GAA, but we are on the Nick Luck Daily podcast and we are only concerned with racing. And I know then the Galway Festival is the first thing that often springs to mind. It starts July 26th and the team at Galway, it was a sorry sight last year when we had to go to basically an empty cruise liner. And I think Galway is as much about the racing as it is about having the people there. So hopefully they will have basically the opportunity to facilitate a pilot event, and I'm sure other racetracks will want to get on board as well. But first things first, owners are a priority. They need to be priority. And I would hope that we might just, this is me throwing it out there, something for like the Derby at the Curra. We need to get owners back. And I know pilot events are very important for the general public, but owners must come first as well. And to date, we've had no indication of when that might happen.
Okay, so would you urge your administrators in Ireland to now start applying some pressure to at least get owners there? Or do you feel that they are already doing that?
I think they are. I've spoken to a number of racecourse managers, and on the back of what has been a sensational National Hunt season, we must not forget that we went the entire flat season last year without having an owner on track. And there is only so much that owners can take. They are basically the lifeblood of the sport, and we cannot have this going on any longer than it should. So I think the sport has generated a lot of goodwill, particularly in this country, on the back of Cheltenham and Aintree. We need to build on that. And I think we have the right people applying the right pressure. And I hope that it'll happen in the not too distant future, because there's no reason why it can't happen. We have massive race courses. We have vaccinations now rolling out. We have all the right indicators. So we're trying to follow the GB lead. But to date, there has been no confirmation to say that we have a date or we have a time or we have a fixture. So something like a landmark, like the Derby, where it's just so prestigious and so important, I think that would be a realistic goal.
Well, just how realistic? I've been talking to the chief executive of the Curra, Ireland's flagship racecourse, Pat Keogh.
Realistic, Nick, we're not that far away, in my opinion. It's been a long journey. It's been very frustrating. I would hope that we would have owners back for the Dubai Duty Free Derby meeting in June. That would be my desire, my wish, and let's see if we can achieve that. But then beyond that, then I think the government have said they're going to look at opening up sport in July, and I think it's realistic that, you know, maybe 2,000, we would have 2,000 people on race courses at some stage, you know, in July is what I would hope. But I mean, it all depends on numbers, that the numbers continue going the right way, and the vaccine is rolled out. So it's all very positive where we're at the moment, and we just hope that that will continue.
How good or otherwise a financial position are you in at the Curra at the moment, given what you've had to go through in the last 18 months?
That's been extremely challenging. It's been extremely challenging for all racecourses. But I mean, Horse Racing Ireland have worked with all racecourses to support all racecourses through this, and it's been very painful. But you know, this is a long road, and like any business, you know, you've got to be prepared for these bumps in the road when they happen. And this was a big bump, we're fine, and we're very grateful for all the support that we've got. But most grateful to the owners, because they are the sport. Without the owners and without their horses, there is no sport. And they've been the ones that have been really loyal, and they've been the ones that have allowed racing to continue. So just can't wait to get them back, Nick.
So there are signs of movement. It won't have escaped your notice that the whistling grandstand at the Curra was the subject of a fair bit of scrutiny again earlier in the week. What's the plan, Pat?
Yeah. First of all, I'd like to apologise to anyone, you know, that was inconvenienced by it. I listened to your coverage afterwards, and it was terrible. I'd have to say, Monday was just a horrific day. I can never remember a worse day on the Curra or anywhere else than it was on Monday. So it was particularly bad. So clearly, I mean, we've been working on this. So we've looked at with the design team, who of course, when they designed the roof, they couldn't have anticipated that there would be a noise. That wasn't planned, so they had to deal with this. It's a big challenge. You could imagine the size of the roof and the height of it and all that. Big job to do it. And, you know, we were insisting that they would get this, whatever solution was there, that, you know, it had to be permanent and had to be right. So they looked at a number of different things. So we have tested the solution. We know the solution works. And what they're doing now is they're rolling that out. So they have to manufacture the solution and install it. That's going to take time. I believe that we'll have it installed in August, in time for the Longines Irish Champions weekend in September.
Pat Keogh there, the CEO of the Curra Racecourse, and yeah, very good to hear him being so frank and apologetic about the whistling grandstand, and it looks as though a solution to that problem has been found and will be ready in time for Longines Irish Champions weekend, which takes place at the Curra and Pat's former stomping ground Leopardstown, which also hosts the key derby trial this weekend, the Derrinstown Derby Trial. Dermot Weld has a runner in the race. He suggested on this podcast yesterday it would be the most informative of all the trials. Jane Mangan, do you agree with him?
I am not entirely sure. Obviously, we want to see the depth of a race that it's going to be. Aidan O'Brien has a number of horses in there. He's obviously sending Kyprios and what was the other horse going to Lingfield tomorrow?
Carlisle Bay.
So you would imagine Bolshoi Ballet might be left for the Derrinstown. You have McSwinney, hopefully, is the key horse, I think. The Racing Post Trophy winner, the horse that was probably the best of these, definitely the best of these as a juvenile. And Jim Bulger has the yardstick of Poetic Flair to measure by. And Dermot Weld with Wakud himself. I'm not sure it's going to be the best trial. The 2,000 guineas is very often the best trial. But who am I to question what Dermot Weld says?
Well, I want to pick up on the Bulger theme if I can. Because McSwinney's fascinating. Obviously, Poetic Flair, he had entries sprinting, miling. You knew he was going to go that way. McSwinney, as you say, he's the Virtan Futurity winner from last year, the race formerly known as the Racing Post Trophy. But he's got verdicts over some of the best two-year-olds from last season, you know, Wembley amongst them, and One Ruler likewise. His form is very, very strong. And if this horse gets all of a mile and a half, then 10-1 now for the Derby looks awfully big to me.
Yeah, I think he's a grossly underestimated horse. He was heavily campaigned last year, but at the same time, he ran six times and his best run was his last run where he beat one ruler. And, you know, that horse is obviously very highly regarded. Jim Bulger, he lets the horses do the talking. And if he thinks himself and Poetic Flair seem the vibe seemed to be that they were going into the Guineas on a similar tandem, that's the form that you're dealing with, a 2000 Guineas winner form. He's obviously very highly rated horse as well. He's by new approach out of a Teofilo mare. Everything suggests that he could be the real Epsom horse. We'll see what the Derrenstown it basically develops into. But I not only has he got the ability, but he's got a killer attitude to boot. So, yeah, he probably is the underestimated horse. And if he is 10-1, I wouldn't put anybody off.
Well, that's the Derrenstown. As Jane said, Aidan O'Brien also sends two to Lingfield, where Godolphin have the favourite. But the man who could put the spanner in the works there is Rafe Beckett, who saddles Scope in the Lingfield Derby trial. He's third favourite at the moment. He's a horse who's quite closely related to the stable's Oaks winner of 2008, Look Here. And the trainer is on the line now. Rafe, quite an exciting colt this on what we've seen so far. Has he moved forward since his Newmarket comeback?
Yeah, it would appear so, Nick. He's been a bit of a sleeper all his time with us, in that sense that he's not a horse who shows very much at home. He sort of surprised us first time out, in the sense that I thought he'd run well, but I didn't think he would know enough to win, let alone have the ability to. So I was pleased with his seasonal debut at Newmarket. I felt that the winner sort of got first run on him, and then he lugged left as well through from the bushes, and that didn't help his cause either. So I'm looking forward to tomorrow.
Just given the way he kind of carried himself through the Newmarket race, would you be happy enough that he'd handle a track like Lingfield?
Well, it's just greenness with him. You know, his mother was a... His mother won a maiden at 100-1. You know, she never showed anything at home, and was best known for dropping everybody who ever sat on her, either on the home or on the race course. Then she got better and better with racing, and I think this horse will too.
Okay, so he's only an 11-2 shot for the Lingfield race. He's got the entry in the Kazoo Derby as well, and obviously his close relative won the Oaks. How instinctively do you feel about his sort of immediate future? Do you instinctively feel this is a horse that could be a player in the Derby this year?
I think that he's going to learn an awful lot tomorrow. I'm not sure that I'm not convinced that he's sharp enough for a derby mentally. You know, I think he's a very laid back, relaxed horse. He only does enough. So in that sense, it'll help him. But equally, he's not a horse, as you've seen in his races, who travels strongly, and he's going to have to up his game tomorrow and after tomorrow if he's to show up at Epsom.
And interestingly, Look Here herself was beaten in the Lingfield Oaks trial and then went on to win at Epsom. And looking back on that now, were you pretty staggered by her victory, or did you go into Epsom thinking that she did have a chance?
Her owner will tell you that I said to him beforehand that if we finished in the first six, we'd run well. Her jockey that day, Seb Sanders, was much more confident than I was. He felt that he'd made a bodge of it at Lingfield. He'd got he got sort of rushed into it down the hill, and she then spun the bend, and the winner got first run on her, Philip Clive Cox is his name, I forget. And he's then nursed her home, but she learned plenty that day. The two things I remember always about that was that when she won a maiden at two, she beat a horse of Michael Stout's called Dr. Fremantle. And Perrin McAvoy wrote, "Look here." And afterwards rang me and said, this is the following morning, so this, you know, reiterated what a good effort it was. I think she won four lengths, and there was another four lengths back to the third. And anybody who's dealt with Karen will tell you that he's a very, very good judge, and very accurate when he got off a horse. And I probably didn't pay enough attention to that at the time. And he then rang me the following spring and asked her if he could asked me if he could ride her in a trial. And I said we had an agreement with Seb Sanders at the time that would never happen. But she was a filly who was very well balanced, very athletic filly. She was made for Epsom, very light framed. This horse is similar in that sense. He's not a heavy horse. But physically, he's not yet the finished article. He's still got some developing to do. So we'll see over the coming weeks. I'm obviously hopeful for tomorrow and optimistic that he comes forward enough for tomorrow for Epsom. But deep down, he might be better suited by the St. Ledger.
Oh, really interesting stuff there. From trainer Rafe Beckett. I'm fascinated to see how Scope gets on and whether he can add himself to the Derby picture. Jane, what you've seen over the last week, whether it be in the Newmarket Stakes, the Guineas, anything at Chester, who or what has stuck their heads above the parapet for you?
Well, you have to start with Mohaffat, because he had never crossed my spectrum onto the Newmarket Stakes, and I can appreciate the form of the race would be questionable and it mightn't have been as deep a race as you would expect, but he just was facile, emphatic, and William Haggis after was just getting us to settle down again and not get carried away. But he definitely threw his hat into the ring. A Frankel out of a See the Stars. He has Derby trip written all over him. Youth Spirit beat Sandhurst in the Chester Vase fair and square. He's a Camelot horse. Connections Andrew Balding know exactly what it takes at Epsom. I definitely took a lot of positives from him, from the Guineas, from Newmarket. Master of the Seas put up a massive performance. It was the bob of the heads between himself and Poetic Flair. Lucky Vega might be the horse that I would take out of the race. To be honest, he's the only horse of the first five home who had no prep run. And just challenging between horses, maybe it wasn't ideal, but I think he went down with an awful lot of credit. Chindit came home well. I think maybe under the stand side, they were a little bit inconvenienced. We saw that in the 1,000 Guineas with alcohol free as well. Just the middle to far side seemed to be favoured for whatever reason. The pace developed over there. So Chindus and Lucky Vega from the 2,000 Guineas, and just the 1,000 Guineas. Santa Barbara, everybody has basically explained their thoughts on that. But I think Alcohol Free is a filly that I'm going to follow for the rest of the season. I think travelling on the wing, listening to Andrew Balding on your podcast yesterday, sounded a little bit frustrating. And I think she's probably better than we saw at Newmarket.
Yeah, he's not ever somebody who gets too high or too low, Andrew, is he? He's quite level, but you could sort of sense that sort of slightly pent-up irritation, I thought, from him as regards how things panned out for her in the 1,000.
Yeah, I think the race developed completely away from her, and Mother Earth was gone before really Oisin had any, and the mare had any chance to react. And I think that there just will be another day. And it's frustrating when basically a draw gets you beaten. At no stage of the race did she look like she had a winnable opportunity. And that's frustrating for Connections, but it'll be all right if she makes up for it over the summer.
And we spoke quite a bit, Jane, yesterday about High Definition, the horse who doesn't go to Lingfield this weekend because of that blood elevated marker in the blood test. Aidan says he can't find anything wrong with him particularly. So there's a possibility he'd go to York for the Dante. It's not a race Aidan's been in love with since Cate Blanco won it all those years ago.
Yeah, I think Aidan suggested that the Dante is often too a little bit close to Epsom than he would preferably want for his horses. But High Definition, this is not what you want, because if you've seen him in his two runs to date and his maiden and in the Beresford, Penny dropped very late. He raced very green. He raced very behind the bridle. He is one horse if you were supporting him or if you were a punter who had backed him, would want him to get the experience of a run into, not just for the undulations and all the tests that comes with Epsom, but just purely because he looks mentally like he would need it.
And more from Jane, including her best bet for the weekend and news on an Aidan O'Brien star, ex-Aidan O'Brien star, travelling to pastures new at the end of the show. Well, I'm hoping that many of you will have been following the progress of Bob Champion, who won the Grand National having recovered from cancer 40 years ago. And he's marking the 40th anniversary with 40 walks, raising yet more money for the Bob Champion Cancer Trust. And he's with me now. Bob, where are you this morning?
I'm at Andrew Balding's, actually, walking on the gallops. We're at the bottom part at the moment. We've still got a great hill to climb. I don't know why these trainers have all these big hills to climb up. I've climbed up everything. I think I'm a mountain goat, I think.
We see why his horses are so fit at the moment, Bob. I'd imagine your fitness is coming on a bit at the moment as well.
Well, it must be, actually. Well, since COVID went down, I was quite sensible because I was a bit fat. I've lost about 30 pounds, and this has kept the weight down a little bit.
And how are you getting on?
We're getting on really well. We've been very lucky with the weather. I only had two moderate days. Beautiful sunny day here today, and quite a lot of people have come along, and they enjoy it. And, you know, it's great to see all different gallops, all different training facilities. You know, if you're interested in racing, come along the last few days.
And you wanted to mark that 40th anniversary, and these anniversaries, they serve as brilliant staging posts to raise people's awareness again, don't they?
Yes, you do. You know, we haven't been able to raise money for the last year. And as you know, science costs money, actually. We've got the two research laboratories to run. And they're doing a very successful job. We've had a couple of major breakthroughs recently. And, you know, we've got to keep the money coming in. You know, without research, people like me and other people wouldn't ever recover from cancer.
And just remind everybody how much the Bob Champion Cancer Trust is up to now in total.
Oh, it's over 15 million.
Amazing.
But, you know, and it's great. People in this countryside have been absolutely fantastic towards me. And we are doing a good job, and I'm quite proud of it.
As well you should be. And how far through this project are you? How much more have you got to work?
Well, we've got 2 days left this week, and then next week is the end of it. And I can't wait, you know, to... I'm actually sitting on a horse at Findon for the first time, God knows how long. I'm going to ride up from the village up to the yard. You know, I can always remember after the horse won the National, we walked up there with the old horse. This time I'm going to ride up.
Oh, that's brilliant. So that you'll be riding up to the yard where you were stable jockey for so many years at Findon to Josh Gifford, and that'll complete the endeavour.
Yes, you know, it's 191 miles we'll have walked. And the reason we did 191 is because I spent 191 days having treatment. So we thought a good number to work on.
Bob Champion there, 40 years on. And still going strong. And do visit the Bob Champion Cancer Trust website if you want to donate. 191 miles for Bob and his team supporting him. Now, good news has emerged from Great British Racing and the ROA. A study showed that 65% of racing fans not currently involved in racehorse ownership would consider it in the next 18 months. That piece of research has prompted a bit of a drive on the part of GBR, whose head of marketing, Greg Taylor, joins me now. Greg, just tell us a little bit about what you've been doing.
We relaunched our In the Paddock platform yesterday, which is on the back of lots of work we've been doing and working closely with the ROA on this project. And, you know, we've had this In the Paddock website for a few years. It was in need of a reboot, and we wanted to bring it back to make sure there was a concerted central effort to promote shared racehorse ownership. But one of the first things we wanted to do was go out and test what the market was. So we wanted to go out and do this research early in the year and see what the appetite was amongst racing fans for becoming involved in racehorse ownership. And I think there was this divide of opinion as to whether, on the back of the pandemic, it would be something that people would be considering, or whether people actually, as I think some brands have decided to market, you know, whether people had more disposable income, because they had, you know, they had been at home and they'd not been able to spend. So we produced a survey in February that was widely shared across a number of racing databases and social media channels, and a big thanks to everyone who helped with that. And we had a really good response with over four, you know, nearly 4,000 completes of that survey, and that was the main takeout. I think it is an encouraging stat that 65% of those currently not involved would want to get involved should the right opportunity present itself. And you know, as you say, obviously, then you can always obviously flip stats to look at the other side, but I think that's actually really encouraging and shows that there is a huge opportunity for us in terms of marketing shared ownership within the next 18 months, and I think making sure that everyone has the right platform and the right tools to find all the information that they need if they're, you know, saying that they would like to get involved.
Greg Taylor, the head of marketing for Great British Racing. And if you do want to explore the idea of shared ownership, just log on to www.inthepaddock.co.uk. It's helping you discover the thrill of owning a racehorse with like-minded people. There's a whole range of search functions and it is completely free of charge. An excellent resource from GBR and the ROA. Right, it's Friday, so it's rankings time. Top 10 horses in the world in association with Thoroughbred Racing Commentary, Active Racehorses, and at 10, sneaking into the top 10 again, it's Palace Pier off the back of his Sandown Mile win. He'll take high order amongst global milers this year. 9 is the Australian sprinter Nature Strip off the back of his TJ Smith romp. 8 Essential Quality up 4 for the Derby 4th. 7 is Adabe down 2. 3 Japanese horses next. 6 Chronogenesis. 5 Gran Allegria. 4 the Triple Crown winner Contrail. Then Tanawa at 3. Dermot Well told us yesterday she'd wait till August before making her seasonal debut. 2 is Mishriff. Judmont International, a big summer target for him, clinging on by his fingernails. To number 1 is Golden 60, who keeps racking up the wins in Hong Kong, but narrowly only last time. Some notable movers this week as well. Up several places, Maxfield in the US and Mare Australis in France, more of whom a little bit later on, as I welcome in James Willoughby with the question. James, Essential Quality up 4, and he only finished 4th in the Derby. How did that happen?
Right, very good question. And the answer is that he added to his resume. For a lightly raced horse, we take the breadth and depth of a horse's portfolio of ratings into account because it gives our system an increasing amount of confidence that their form is solid overall. Now, Essential Quality and all other young aspirants on the classic trail, there isn't that much to go on. It can be that a horse who's fancied for a race like the Kentucky Derby or our Guineas over here, it can be that when they disappoint, it turns out that their form really wasn't any good. But in this case, we saw Essential Quality not just run close up in fourth place, and our algorithm doesn't know that he had a tough trip and was probably the best horse in the race, but also his form worked out okay in the race as well. And overall, his form is getting a stronger and stronger look to it. So that's the reason why our algorithm has elevated him slightly, because it's more confident that he really is a top-class horse.
Let's talk about then all four classic winners at the weekend. Medina Spirit, winner of the Kentucky Derby, Malathart, winner of the Kentucky Oaks, Mother Earth, winner of the 1,000 Guineas, and Jim Bolger's Poetic Flair, winner of the 2,000 Guineas. Which of those four do your rankings signpost toward achieving the most this season, do you think?
Excellent question. And we have a clear favourite of the four, and that is the Kentucky Oaks winner, Malathart. And that really is because he has a strong profile, and also she's achieved a lot in a short space of time with few opportunities. Poetic Flair has had more chances, the 2,000 Guineas winner. Medina Spirit, of course, is much more exposed. But in Malathart, we have 3 group races to go on, 2 at group 1 level, 1 at grade 2 level, and all 3 resulted in wins for her. And big figures too. Her figures are really building. And we awarded her a performance rating of 116, which is really quite high, especially considering the relatively tight nature of the finish. And I would add that outside the framework of the rankings, if you look at some advanced metrics, the thing about this horse is the way she strides. There is a strong correlation between stride length and ability, and that's particularly true in American dirt racing, just because the way horses accelerate on grass isn't really played out in the way that races on dirt are run. She has a giant stride, and I am so excited to hear she's going to be taking on male horses potentially in races like the Preakness and the Belmont. If our figures are spot on here, she'll beat them.
There's a certain irony to this as well, because this was the week when Todd Pletcher was inducted into the Hall of Fame. Sadly, he wasn't able to take Rags to Riches with him, which of course was what he dearly wanted, but he was not voted into the American Hall of Fame. His previous Belmont Stakes winner, filly who beat the boys. It would be quite something if this year Malathart were to, in his mind anyway, right that wrong. And a big, long, striding filly. And the other irony is that John Velasquez, the enemy may be within. He might end up going to the Belmont Stakes on a horse with a possibility of winning the Triple Crown in Medina Spirit, and his danger is his own mount, Malathart.
It's like these news angles suddenly start to blossom at this time of year. And it reminds us that we're playing the greatest game on earth, because there are so many levels at which we can really digest the implications of a race race. And in particular, the humans involved interact with the horses, and it really is a very rich tapestry that results. And what you say is very interesting. And I think that we've seen this continual theme that we've written about on the site for the last few years of female horses, proving that they're at least a match for the boys. And I've explained that technically before, which is the allowance that female horses receive around the world in all races where they meet males is fair. Generally speaking, based on the average race that takes place between the two, which is usually a lower level than the exalted level of group and grade one racing. But as you go up the distribution of talent, as you go towards the better and better horses, the distribution of the two sexes tends to become homogeneous, which is that the best females are just as good as the best males. And in some cases, they can be better when randomness intercedes. And female horses receive a weight allowance. So when they take on male horses in Group 1 races and Grade 1 races around the world, they tend to beat them inevitably. And that's what we're seeing. And it was great to see Rags to Riches do that. I remember broadcasting that race and how exciting it was and how people loved that theme of a female racehorse doing what normally the connection to female racehorses is shied to do. And let's see, let's hope that Malathart really takes on the world, because she has got amazing physical tools and she's got the will to win too. She's just everything that you like to watch in this sport.
Do your rankings think that either Guineas at Newmarket was any good?
That's also a good question, and the answer is more the 2000. We've got that as a slightly substandard renewal, a performance rating of 118. It normally requires 120. Our figures are on the same scale as the world's best racehorse ratings, which is a sort of in Britain, the BHA or official rating scale. And we've got the race just below standard. We've got the 1,000 guineas similarly. And that's a product really of the fact that the form lines going into the race and the exposed nature of quite a few of the contenders suggesting there's a cap on how excited you can really be about. And I would add, it's something I don't think has been played out enough. My personal view about the 2,000 guineas is that it was heavily influenced by track bias. I strongly believe that the horses that raced towards the far side of the track in both the 2000 and the 1000 were favoured. And I wouldn't be giving up on horses that raced near side. And I think it'll be interesting to see how these races actually stand up.
And Andrew Balding, when we spoke to him on the podcast yesterday, you sensed he got that feeling with Alcohol Free as well. He thought there was a bit of unfinished business there. And we'll see how that plays out when she goes to the Coronation Stakes at Royal Ascot. A couple of other horses who've climbed this week. They're well outside the top 10, James, but I think they deserve a mention. Maxfield is one. The often injured but very talented Brendan Walsh-trained Godolphin horse who won at Churchill Downs at the weekend. And Mare Australis, who came to win the Prix Ganay for André Farb and looks a prospect.
Absolutely spot on. I think with Mare Australis's win in the Ganay, which we rated 121, the performance of the week, same figure as the Kentucky Derby, marginally better according to our numbers. We think we have established a horse who's going to be a massive player now in the middle distance European events leading up to the Arc. And this is a horse I think could thrive even more and become a much better known horse in Britain as the season winds on. And Maxfield, well, I mean, if he'd been granted soundness, what might this horse have achieved? He really hasn't had the chance to put a string of efforts together to build the seasoning and conditioning required to make a really top-notch horse. But he has so much talent, I think. And yeah, he's winning the Ali Sheba Stakes was another step in the right direction. He's already a Grade 1 winner in the Breeders' Futurity, of course, as a two-year-old. And I think he's going to progress and progress if he's granted soundness.
Well, thanks to James and Greg and all my guests today. Jane is still with me. Jane, just before you give me your best winner for the day or the weekend, I ought to mention Sovereign, dear old Sovereign. He's now with Chad Brown in the United States, and he's going to bowl up at Belmont Park this weekend, and I'd say he's got a pretty decent chance of winning.
I think it's an enterprising route to go with him. Look, obviously he's the 2019 Irish Derby winner where he beat Anthony Van Dyke. He was last seen in November when he finished third in the Bahrain Trophy, and I think it's an inspired move. The Man O' War has often been a race European trainers have sent horses to. Well, the connections of Sovereign have sent this horse to Chad Brown, and these types of turf races in the US, he's a very classy horse. Often these races don't turn up, well, maybe not the strongest of renewals, but with a horse of this caliber, he could be thrown in there. I'm not familiar. You'd be more familiar with the American opposition.
If he runs to his best, he should nearly win this, really. He lacks the fitness edge that one or two will have, but Chad will have done plenty. Irad Ortiz is going to ride him. 10:44 British time, Man O' War Stakes at Belmont Park. You'll see that on Sky Sports Racing on Saturday night.
There you go. So we have to go out with a winner. Hopefully we'll go to Cork, we'll go to the Polonia Stakes, and we'll put our faith in Johnny Murtagh as we have so often done in the past. Measure of Magic on ratings is the winner of this race. Lock Lean is dropping back down trip. Measure of Magic is all pace. So the 5.5 furlongs and the straight track at Cork should be ideal in the Polonia Stakes this evening at 5:40.
Jane, thanks so much. Thanks to all my guests. And most importantly, thank you for listening. Don't forget you can download this podcast on all reputable podcast platforms. And please do subscribe, leave us a rating and give us a review. We will see you again after the weekend. Bye-bye. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and Thoroughbred Racing Commentary.